Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
All right, welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Matt Pajak. And I brought on one of my Baseball America colleagues for a conversation today, Matt. I'm going to welcome J.J. Cooper to the show. How's it going, J.J.?
Good. I'm glad glad to finally be on this show. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be a good time. Matt.
There's no needle in that. That sounded like a needle. I didn't mean that it's a needle. I'm excited to be here. So,
well, we'll see how JJ does. If he does all right, we'll bring him back on. We got to put him on the hot seat with the sandwich question before we do anything else. JJ, we know you know what's coming here. All right. 20-80 scale. Jersey Michaels. James Jonathan's. Subway, Capriati's.
I've got to give an NA on Capriati's.
And everybody else.
Yep.
We're trying.
Okay. So I'm always going to go, I'll go Jersey Mike's as a 70 because, for one, it's important to me. I want a hot sandwich sometimes. And Jimmy John's, not an option. Don't mind a sub. Don't mind a cold sub. But I like to have, sometimes I want a Philly. Sometimes I want a Chipotle chicken Philly, you know, kind of thing. And I have that option. Subway, I'm going to give as, you know, I'm going to give it a 40. And I'm going to say that 40, like, with respect. I mean, from the standpoint of, like, you know, it's never going to hit it out of the park. But to put a scouting grade to it, like, my dad had bypass surgery, a couple of months ago now. And there was a Subway right across the street from the hospital. And my mom and I would walk over there and get lunch like probably 5 times out of the 7 days that he was in the hospital to stay out of, you know, not do the cafeteria. And there was a plethora of options, none of which blew me away, but all of which I was like, I have successfully eaten and now I will move on. And I like a cookie. And then Jimmy John's, I'll give a 50. And again, I would probably put it higher if not, I like Jimmy John's, but I would put it higher if not for the fact I do want every now and then, I want the option of a hot sub that gives me, you know, like more choices. If I'm like, okay, all of a sudden the Philly cheesesteaks on the, or again, mess it up with, add some jalapenos to it, maybe go chicken, whatever, things like that. Subway also wins on that because they, you know, you can always throw a meatball sub in there. So that's my sub rankings. The bread's
JJ brought up a really good point there that I hadn't previously considered, and I'm 100% in his camp, and that's the hot sandwich. I would prefer a hot sandwich over a cold sandwich, and you're right.
I've literally had this argument where there was a Jersey Mike's and a Jimmy John's, and which one you all want to go to, and I'm always going to go Jersey Mike's because it's like I've just opened up another window, you know? Like, it's another option. Don't have to go that way.
And you're making me think about Subway in a different light, too. And I agree on the cookie part. I don't want that to go unnoticed. But Subway feels a little bit like the aging out big leaguer that's had a really good career, but really isn't like worth a whole lot at this juncture other than like clubhouse presence. It's kind of like, you know, like Subway had its day and now it's just kind of there.
And it's got seven pitches, though. Like, it's kind of like, it is like that aging pitcher who's like, my fastball may not have be a great fastball, but you know what? I'm going to throw the kitchen sink at you. And Subway kind of does sometimes. It's like, oh, here's our new things that are on the menu this time. And this, it might be like, hey, we're doing pizza this week. I don't want a Subway pizza. But they're just trying everything.
He's yeah. Kyle Gibson is Subway, apparently. That's the player comp for Subway. That is Durable. A great point. And it's a dividing line between, like, I guess Subway has hot sandwiches. You can kind of consider it that. But it is a dividing line between Capriotti's, you know, Jersey Mike's, and then Jimmy John's and Subway, where you're much more likely to get a hot sub, especially Capriotti's. I think, like, that would be really my go-to, you know, the hot Bobby, the day after Thanksgiving sandwich. It's delicious.
Yeah, maybe that's why I'm so high on Capriotti's, is because that's what I get there, is hot sandwiches. And they got a lot of really good options. So, JJ, scope out a Capriotti's.
I knew that was coming, and I was excited to be able to weigh in. You know, I have thoughts.
We'll have to find one in Dallas when we're down there next month. That's the goal. Find the Capriotti's in Dallas.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they're not around here. But we didn't come on here today to talk about sandwiches. JJ had an excellent article digging into some of the different factors that have increased home runs in the NCAA Division I over the last couple of years, kind of comparing and contrasting it with D1 and D2, discussing the bats, discussing the balls. But there was an element of it, and some graphs that you actually included as well, that kind of spurred a different conversation with Matt and myself regarding the number of, I guess, playing time share for, we'll call it, underclassmen versus seniors. We've seen a shrink in at-bats, I think, as well as innings for freshmen, for sophomores, for juniors, and we've seen a pretty substantial increase for seniors. So I thought that was a really interesting angle, and it's something that I think Matt and I have kind of been stewing on and talking about for a few months, kind of indirectly, and just in terms of the impact of, you know, the draft and the transfer portal, and then of course that extra year of eligibility that so many players gained due to COVID.
Yeah, I almost feel like it comes up in every conversation. And Jeff, when you shared the clip prior to the article coming out, you know, I was pretty excited that JJ had put, you know, percents of playing time based on class in college, because I feel like I've been yelling at the clouds for the past 2 years, because there's really toolsy, talented high school players that are going to college and they're just sitting on the shelf and collecting dust. Case in point, last night I'm looking at Cape League statistics, and the guy that's tearing off the, I mean, I know it's been three games, okay, I understand, tearing the cover off the ball for the first three games for Brewster, JD Rogers. That guy's the most athletic, tooled up, you know, physical guy in the Vandy program, and he hasn't really seen the field at all. And I think he's heading into his junior year. He might be heading into his senior year. I mean, he might have 2 years on the shelf at Vandy, at least, if not three, right? And it's like, that guy, well, if he doesn't go into Pro Bowl and then he goes to Vandy, and it's, you know, there's an emphasis on win now, and the whole, I mean, he's draft eligible right now. He's on the Cape, and this is the first time he's getting regular at bats in 3 years.
Yeah, he is. He's going to be a senior as well. That's accurate.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is all tricky because, like, I do wonder, I do want to caveat. I want to add one caveat to this, and you mentioned it, but there's this, I almost call it like the baby boom after the World War II, where we had all these babies being born. And so you had this demographic bubble that kind of shifted through, that's still shifting through the U.S., many, many years later. We see that we have, like, this senior class this year is the biggest, probably the biggest we'll ever have, right? Because effectively this year, not that there aren't going to be some kind of holdovers, but this year is every 2020 freshman and every 2021 freshman, right? And we've seen that, like, when I did this data, like looking at it, 2021, 22, 23, 24, well, the 2021 freshman class was the biggest freshman class, you know, of this study, and the 22 sophomore class, and the 23 junior class, and the 24 senior class. So we have that, but we have the other part, which I think what you guys have been talking about, what you've been talking about a lot, Matt, which is we're also now in a different environment where we're in an environment where your players, your roster was largely built from within. You have kind of an incentive. You've bought these players. I mean, it sounds bad and modern, but you get, like, it's the difference between buying a car and renting a car at Hertz, right? If I'm going to do things a little differently. If I'm going to get that freshman in games because I'm going to count on him as a sophomore. But if I'm in a situation where my roster next year is going to be entirely different than my roster this year, I'm not going to risk losing a midweek to get that guy a start, or I'm not going to necessarily care that I'm going to give the guy who's a little bit less skilled right now but more talented, I'm not necessarily as worried about getting that guy at bats midweek and maybe losing a game because of it, because I'm going to get the benefit next year or the year after that. The whole calculus I feel like I'm at has changed, because on both ends, that player, you know, you don't know that that player is going to be part of your program 2 years down the road.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and you brought it up that this is both the senior class for 2020 and 2021 same time. So while there's going to be the shift where, you know, these players with the COVID year are going to age out of college baseball. And I think the tricky thing, and I don't know, this is kind of hard to quantify per se, but what did we learn in the past 4 or 5 years with a bunch of older players on the field? And I think, you know, anybody with two eyes who's been watching college baseball for the past couple of years is basically seeing, and look, there's other dynamics. There's NIL being introduced and consolidation, conference movement, the whole nine. But I mean, what we saw, especially at the mid-major level, is that age and experience was winning. That was kind of like your ticket to win. So if you were UC Irvine this year, Texas State a couple of years ago, Louisiana Tech's kind of taken that path. Austin Peay had a really good year this year. I mean, right? That's kind of the path for the mid-major to compete, to potentially get a shot at winning a regional, winning a super regional, you know, potentially getting themselves to Omaha. So go ahead.
You said that you could win a super regional, and that's where I have a worry that I don't even know if that's possible now, as we talk about a CWS where we have 4 ACC and 4 SEC teams. And by the way, by the time this goes out, we might be down to pretty much, you know, 1 ACC team left and all SEC teams.
Yeah, and it hurts my soul a little bit as someone who grew up a fan of the Long Beach State Dirtbags and really took to the sport over, you know, Cal State Fullerton and those types of programs. But I think the point of what I'm saying is with all these old players in college baseball over the past couple of years, we learned that, like, age and experience beats your talented freshman. And now that these players are aging out, that doesn't change the fact that age and experience beats talented freshmen. So now that's what we're looking for. And with the portal and no limitations on the portal, and with Jay Johnson's comments last week, I mean, he just said what everyone's doing and been doing for the past year since the portal was introduced. I mean, there's no evil to Jay Johnson's words. He came out and said it. It was like the biggest elephant that you could possibly put in the room, right? But he's building his roster year to year. Okay, well, if you're building your roster year to year, and it's kind of been proven over the past couple of years in the environment that we've had with an influx of older players playing in college baseball, age and experience beats your talented freshman. So if I am we're not even going to use program, we're going to outlaw that word. If I am a team in college baseball and I'm looking to retool for next year, I'm not retooling out of the high school pool of players. I'm spending my time in the collegiate summer leagues recruiting the mid-major kid, you know, seeing who can help my program next year. I'm not spending as much time, you know, covering Lake Point or the PG tournaments or Five Tool or any number of high school tournaments, right? I think it's really made the job very difficult on recruiting coordinators and college coaches in the summertime, because it's like, well, they used to know where they had to go to see players, and now it's like split attention. There's too much to see. There's 5,000 portal players and there's thousands of high school players. Where do I go? What can help me? And per Jay Johnson, he's going to be posted up in his lawn chair in Orleans.
If I could say the other thing that stands out to me about this is I think what the other thing that teams are now doing, they're, like you said, it's two jobs. And so you're kind of splitting your resources. I think there is still, you know, there is still high school recruiting going on to some extent, but it's so much less important than it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, the whole idea was we've got to get these freshmen, sophomores, you know, lined up, because then we know what our program's going to be like 3 years from now when they arrive. And now we're in a situation where, you know, I've had coaches tell me, I'm sure you've had more tell you, like, just think of the variability there, right? Think of the guys. I could come up with 10 names right now of guys who, as high school sophomores, look like they're going to be the best guy in the class. And unfortunately, by the time you get to their senior year, and I know the recruiting rules have changed now also to juniors and all that, but by the time they hit senior year, the rest of the class has caught up to them. You know, they matured a little bit more quickly. They were more skilled than everyone else, but the rest of the class caught up to them. Now take that to a much bigger extreme, which is what you just talked about, Matt. If I'm going around the collegiate summer leagues and I'm looking at the best mid-major guys, and not always mid-major, by the way, you know, even like power, you know, power four, I guess it is at this point, kind of like programs or whatever we want to call that number. And it's like, but there's an opportunity that I might still be able to get that player. But the other thing I have there is I have so much more confidence in that player's ability to step in and play. Because, you know, the reality of it is there's a much bigger jump to go from high school to Division I than there is to go from a mid-major D1 where you've already produced to a different school, a larger conference, or even to go from D2, you know, where you're getting summer college league. If I see a guy in the Cape or the Northwoods League or the Coastal Plain, wherever it is, West Coast, these are all data points that I'm way more confident with that player than I am with a very talented high school, especially pitcher. We don't know how that guy's going to make the adjustment. The complete calculus has completely flipped. And I mean, we're all living in it. That's what the world is now. But I think you're right to say, like, it's not just changed. I don't think that everyone's caught up to how dramatically it's changed is the way I've got.
And I mean, I think, you know, obviously being here on the Cape and covering it really heavily over the last now four seasons since the transfer portal has, you know, come into effect. It's funny how things have changed, and it's not irregular now to sort of see 5 to 6 college coaches at some point in July kind of walking around. You know, I've seen Jay Johnson out there. I've seen Wes Johnson when he was still with LSU going out there. I think he actually shut down Grant Taylor now with the White Sox. At the start that I was at, it was the last time that he pitched and he left the Cape. They tried to talk Paul Gervaisi, I think it was, to come back to LSU, you know, tall guy with really weird release characteristics that pitches in the Mets system now. But it was sort of that work. And then, you know, you'll see, you know, Willie Bloomquist or whoever it is, like guys just floating around. Tony V I saw last year at Kituit. And they're there for a reason. And it's not necessarily just to check in on their guys. It's because there's a bunch of potential seniors, potential transfers, guys who weren't getting playing time. And we see that all the time. You see some guy who's pretty nasty come out of the bullpen and you're like, oh, this guy pitches for Arkansas or something and only had, you know, 12 innings over two seasons. And that's a guy that could still help another, you know, program if, you know, he figures something out over the summer. And I think that's the other thing you see too, is you'll see guys that at least the last couple of years that would have success over the first couple of weeks of the Cape before, you know, the whatever declaration date for the transfer window ended. And those guys would just throw their name in there. I can remember Cade Morris a couple of years ago, he ended up going back to Nevada, but you know, he was being pursued by TCU and a few other schools. And that was something that I don't think he had in his mind, you know, June 11th, when he came down to, you know, the Cape. It wasn't that he was necessarily going to go into the portal, but he had two outstanding starts. There was a lot of buzz around him. And all of a sudden these guys jump into the portal. And then you factor in all the other Ivy League guys, mid majors, D1, D2 guys that might have a lot, JUCO guys, you know, that, you know, like a Cam Schulke, who was, I think, Cape reliever of the year in 2022, went to a different JUCO than where he was and then committed to Mississippi State. And I think was maybe their closer this year, or at least pitched a decent amount of innings out of their pen. And it's like, you know, these guys kind of hang around a little longer. And I think for some of them, it almost makes sense of like, why would I go to pro ball if I can maybe even get a little bit of NIL money? And I think that's the other factor as well, is the name, image, likeness contracts can maybe pull some guys away from signing as NDFAs because they might get a little bit more money, you know, as part of that NIL deal.
I kind of want to ask, kind of jumping off that, to ask Matt, which is kind of along these lines. The other problem I do see, though, that when we look at, we are in the era of summer college league baseball, right? We, I mean, I didn't even mention the draft league. I didn't mention the Appy League, you know, the leagues that are like the second teams in parks, you know, like, so you have the Appy League, so you have Danville Otterbots, so then you have the Danville, daddies, you know, as well.
Yeah.
All these things. And at the same time, if I was a coach, right, and I know that I'm saying right now from a coach's perspective, if I'm at a solid mid-major program and my pitchers come to me and say, any of them say, who are good, and they say, hey, I want to pitch in fill-in-the-blank league, I don't want them to go. It's the worst possible thing. I know if hitters, like, okay, you're going to the same thing. But with pitchers, I can say, like, look, you know, you had a long, we relied on you pretty heavily. You probably need to rest, recover, all that. There is no incentive if you are a good mid-major program or really any program almost to want to encourage your pitchers to go, because all you're doing basically might be good for the pitcher, but all you're doing essentially is putting, you know, like, You're putting them in the shop window saying, hey, everyone, take a good look and decide if this pitcher can help you next year.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different things I want to hit on here between what you guys just said there. I mean, there was an example of a team that won over 40 games this year and made the field of 64 mid-major that held back one of their most talented juniors last year. And the coach, you know, said straight up, I'm not sending them out. Because he was afraid he was going to get poached. And he came back and he was one of their best hitters and they made a run. They, you know, did pretty well for themselves. I experienced the same thing, right? So I'm here in Colorado, work with the Slammers. College guys come back in the summer. You know, we've got all our high school guys, right? So this kind of hits on a couple different angles of the conversation. But yes, there was an arm, mid-major D1 arm that's back here for the summer. He's got like 40 innings to his name over 2 years. He wants to go in pro ball. He's going to be draft eligible after next spring. And I was like, okay, I've got relationships on up on the Cape from when I interned there back in 2014, 2015. I'm like, do you know what summer ball needs? Every summer ball coach is looking for a player that is not currently under contract with a summer ball team that is going to be able to give them innings this summer. And that's like trying to find the needle in the haystack at this point. I mean, it's June 18th. Okay. So as soon as one of these arms from Omaha or that just finished in a super regional says, hey, I'm shutting it down for the summer. Okay. Now there's a gap on three or four different Cape teams. There's a gap on three or four different NECBL teams, Coastal Plain League teams. They're looking for anybody. Look, they take me, they take you, they take Jeff. Put a glove on, go out there on the mound, give me three innings. Just throw
if
it.
You
over.
Can throw if, I don't even have to be, I'm not asking you to throw strikes. I'm going to ask you to look like you might be able to one day throw strikes because we got to get these innings filled.
Got to get these innings.
Pitchers. There are not enough pitchers to get you through summer, which, by the way, also makes the data a little bit sketchier because you are facing guys who will not pitch come spring.
I mean, I just a very small anecdote on that. The first or second year of the Appy League, you know, there was a team where there was literally local guys, local college kids throwing on one of those Appy League teams, and their fastballs were topping out at like 72 or 73. I don't even know if they were playing for their college, but they were local college kids that happened to be around for the summer. Hey, give us innings. But with that in mind, just let me finish the thought, Jeff, and then I know you got something on the tip of your tongue here. So I was like, hey, I'm going to reach out on your behalf to a team up on the Cape, and I'm just going to let them know, like, hey, here's his story. This is what he's got for you. You know, he's a left-handed pitcher. He's got some funk. He's got some competitive nature. He throws strikes, right? Like, fastball's got run on it. He can give you 20, 30, 40 innings this summer. And nobody knows that he wasn't placed the summer this house. So opportunity presents itself. Hey, I want to have a conversation with the kid. Maybe he comes in, sometime in July when we need to start filling innings. Okay. He reached out to his college coach. His college coach was like, you don't really need to go to the Cape, And I'm like, hey, look, I don't know your college pitching coach, right? I'm not saying there's anything insidious here. But JJ, like, there is a little bit of what you just said where it's like, man, if he went up there and he had like two good weeks, like, my buddy's the third or fourth coach on a mid-major program that said that they don't recruit high school outfielders. That's only from the portal. He said that he's covering high school tournaments this summer. And he said his head coach is going to be up on the Cape for 3 weeks, starting next week, looking for players out of the portal. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's what they're afraid of. It's exactly what you're talking about. It's like, it's the thing is that you can take a 21-year-old at their word. Hey, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to pitch. I'm going to honor my commitment to your program. I'm not going to leave. I like it here. This, that, whatever. They go up there. They have a little bit of success. A couple people get in their ears. And it's like, you don't know how you're going to feel until you get that attention. You're not going to know how you don't know what is potentially presenting itself. Hey, come play here. We play in front of 5,000, 6,000 fans every time out. It's like, oh man, all of a sudden that sounds really interesting. And it's like, yeah, I know.
All of a sudden Omaha becomes possible.
All of a sudden it's like, there's resources here. And like, yeah, I do want to play pro ball, and they're making a compelling argument. Now there's money potentially that they're looking, you know what I mean? And it's like, you don't know how you're going to react to that. And I think the college coaches, back to your point, tie a knot in this thing, are cognizant of the fact that a kid's going to say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going in the transfer portal. Like, I'm going out. I'm going to compete this summer. I want to improve my chances at pro ball. And I think the college coaches are like, yeah, like, I understand all those things. You don't know what's going to happen when you taste a little bit of success up there in front of some people that are much bigger than us. Anyway.
To just jump off that really quickly, which is the other thing about this is, I mean, we're just talking about mid-majors and all and how rough it is for them. With a 20-round draft and an open portal, the world of the D2/NAIA team, I mean, that's brutal, because I ran the numbers on it. Two players, as I can, again, it's tough because you're making sure you get it right. But best I can tell, two players from NAIA programs were drafted last year. Two were drafted the year before that as well. And I've been told by scouts who it's like, I've got guys, I've got arms who are every bit as good as the D1 arms that I scouted. But I can't get them drafted because they're pitching at a program that doesn't have TrackMan. And that's a giant black hole. And it's like, hey, you know, like if you're comparing that guy versus someone who's pitching midweeks, you know, at a D1 and you have data on every pitch they threw, well, we're going to go with the guy who we feel way more confident. So it's pushing all in that direction.
Yeah, and that's all I was trying to say to this particular player in regards to, like, okay, you do have designs on playing pro ball. You're going to be draft eligible after next spring. Like, go up to the Cape. You might not have a good outing. You might not have three or four good – you might have three or four bad outings in a row, right? But, like, the TrackMan's picking it up. And, they're, you know, like, you may throw the changeup that you don't have feel for right now, and someone might be like, ooh, there's something there. You know what I mean? Every night you're playing in front of – a rotation of 15, 20 different scouts, right? And it's a different scout every time out, right? Like I told him straight up, I was like, you know how it works at your school? Like they hear guys throwing 99 that come out, like they take a nap and then they hope that he rolls out for the ninth inning, right? Like they're not paying attention to anybody else on the field, right? You know how it works on the Cape is if you're an area scout, like I have Brewster, I have Orleans, and you are responsible for reports on every player on that roster.
Yeah. And I mean, even certain teams, you're going to have cross checkers that come through and do 2 weeks in the Cape. You're going to have executives and decision makers in the front office that maybe want to roll through and do a week on the Cape. It's a destination as well. I mean, I think that's why that's the thing that keeps the Cape strong. You know, I've heard the conversations around it potentially dying and all the other things and other leagues grabbing shares, etc. But I think the thing that people come back to is that, like, there's a lot of guys that like to go out there, frankly. You know, you see a lot more wives and families at those Cape games with scouts than you ever see at pro games or college games. And, you know, that's part of it is there's so much traffic through there. And it may not even be an area scout that has your area or your team. It could be a guy that comes in, you're covering Orleans, and a guy comes in for Bourne. And especially this time of year, and this is the point that I was going to make a few minutes ago, is the early part of the Cape, you get a lot of guys that are doing that last minute work for 2024, for that draft that's upcoming in a month. Not to say that they don't know guys, but there might be a player or two that they weren't familiar with. A guy shows another pitch, someone was injured, whatever it might be. And they get that other look. And I think the quality of pitching in the early part of the Cape is a product of that, where it's pretty good. You see a lot more guys that throw strikes. You get more seniors. You get more juniors who are draft eligible, or even juniors that are looking, you know, jumping into the portal and maybe looking for a power five, or as you called it before, the power four opportunity. And, you know, later in the year, you do start to see some of the quality of the pitchers start to sort of wane. And I think a lot of it is because, you know, those draft eligible guys or guys that were going into the portal, they either get drafted or they shut it down. And then you have a whole crew of, you know, pitchers where it's sort of best practices to not pitch during the summer. If you're not asked to play for the collegiate national team, you might go to a training facility or something like that. I know Cooper Jerpy did that a couple of years ago and kind of worked himself into a first rounder. So I even think with the summer leagues and the opportunities there, there's maybe more for the mid-major player that maybe his coach doesn't want him to go there, but it's ultimately the best thing for that player's career more often than not. And I think that's the tricky thing if you're a mid-major coach, right, that you're dealing with is, do I do what's best for my players? Which I think ultimately most of them probably really want to do that. People see how they handle situations, but at the same time, you have to worry about backfilling that guy if he potentially leaves and finding somebody else to, you know, fit that roster spot, and you're potentially losing arguably one of your best arms, one of your best hitters, you know, in the portal.
Kind of to tie into Matt, to your other point, So what would you do if you're a high school junior right now? What's the answer to this? Because basically all we've laid out is, man, it's bleak. It's really bleak. You know, you're not going to get recruited by some schools because they're going to wait and let you go show you could do it somewhere, and then they'll look at you in the portal. You're going to get buried potentially behind older guys. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, I think I'm glad you brought this up because I was just about to bring it up, and I think it's important. This is more of like the player-centric position here, and there's competing incentives right now in college baseball that previously existed, but they didn't compete the way that they do right now, which is like exposure and wanting to get drafted and like the coach wanting to, you know, build a winning team program, if you will, whatever it is. But like looking at it from the pro perspective, right? Like professional baseball wants nothing to do with a 23-year-old senior outfielder who just hit 25 home runs in a mid-major. They don't, right? Like you look at like Lyle Miller Green, like he might get a chance. Go look at his stats. Lyle Miller Green, Austin Peay, what he's done the past 2 years. There's a chance that they throw him a bag of chips after the 20 rounds are up, right? And then he's the first guy cut when the next class comes in, right? But like the coach isn't telling you that. So it's kind of like, okay, you got to kind of like take care. Don't just go into a program and put your full faith in the coach, because the coach is trying to win. And it's going to help him win if you stick around for another year. It's going to help him win if you don't jump in the portal, if you're a good contributing player, right? But on the player side, if you have any interest in playing professional baseball, it's kind of like, at this point, if someone's interested in you at any point, out of high school, if you're at a JUCO, out of JUCO, you know, if you're draft eligible after a year when you didn't get really a whole lot of playing time and they want to take you in the 15th, 16th, 17th round, if you want to play pro ball, you have to take that money and go. Right now, how do you put yourself in the best position if you have aspirations to play pro ball? And honestly, I mean, Ryan Waldschmidt is kind of like your keystone example. Ryan Waldschmidt, Florida high school kid, committed to Charleston Southern, which is a place that he knew he could go play as a freshman. He did. He was, I think, the conference freshman of the year. Jumped in the portal, immediately slotted in with Kentucky. Right, he became an everyday player for Kentucky straight out of the chute after he proved it at a mid-major, and then he's worked himself into potentially first-round consideration in this draft. He's in Omaha right now. I think he's the leadoff hitter. I think that's what it was.
He is.
Yeah, he's the leadoff hitter. Right, and it's like, well, do you blame Ryan Waldschmidt for leaving Charleston Southern? Absolutely not, because these coaches right now, and coaches, cover your ears if you're listening to this, but like, they need to win for their livelihood. So if they bring in uber talented freshmen, and I'll use an example of a kid that the best thing he could ever do was take the $3 million that was offered to him. I know, tough choice, right? But Walker Martin from Colorado, and it's an example that hits home because he played for the Slammers, and I know the kid, but I was shouting it from the rooftops, and I never said it directly to the kid or the family, but this kid needs to sign because he was committed to Arkansas and he's a Colorado high school bat, and he plays not even in the top classification here in Colorado. He went to Eaton High School. He shows up at Arkansas. Arkansas needs to win, right? The JUCO shortstop is going to play over Walker Martin. If Walker Martin rolls out there the first week in non-conference play and he does what he's done so far in the Arizona Complex League, which is strike out a ton. He has struck out a ton, right? But professional baseball is one of like the last safe frontiers where you can go play baseball. And if you're a priority player based on signing bonus, they'll roll you out there in the two hole night after night. You can go 0-for-4 with three punch outs, 0-for-4, three punch outs, 0-for-4, three punch outs, boot three balls in the field. And they'll let you struggle your way to getting some traction on your tires and get going because they invested in you and now you're on your way. You can't do that in college baseball today. You just can't. You can't do that at a Power Five. So even though he was an uber talented player, one of the top players ranked in the class, performed at area codes, this, that, whatever, there was going to be a bigger jump for a cold weather bat to an SEC program than a kid from a JUCO, a kid from a mid-major, or even that ultra polished Kevin McGonigal, Aiden Miller type kid that made it to campus, which would be like a Trent Carraway, right? Those are the types of kids that we're seeing make the jump from high school baseball to playing as a freshman. It's those kids that have that polish, right? So unless you're that kid, look, like, if someone's interested in you and you want to play professional baseball, take whatever money they're offering you and go, just go do it. You know what I mean? Because it's very bleak out there.
I will give a counterpoint. If you can get money playing college baseball, because the other reality here is that, again, and in the world of NIL, it's very tricky nowadays to know like what's real, what's not, right? But I would say with that, like, it's bleak everywhere from a standpoint of like, look, if you're, as you said, Matt, if you're a first round pick, you're going to get, Keone Kavakou was just released, right? Feel bad for Keone. It never worked out in pro ball, but he got paid, you know, pop-up prospect. But he's an example of the runway you get as a first round pick, right? Like, he's never hit in pro ball, and here he is being released in 2024. And basically, yeah, there was a COVID year, but essentially he had 5 years, never made it to double A, never hit at any level, always struck out, all that, put it all together, right? But the flip side of that is, if you're a 15th rounder, like you said, the example of that, your window may be about, you know, it may be almost basically till the next draft that you have your chance to show what you can do. And so, like, I agree and disagree kind of with your point from a standpoint of like, if they're going to offer you $25,000, right? And I know you do get a scholarship program. You can still then go to school, you know, if you take advantage of it, right? You can then go to school on MLB's dime. So even if you're doing that out of high school, but if you do that, and then, so nowadays the complex league's been moved up. So you're a 15th round high school kid, and then you spend that first year basically at US now tricky league playing games that don't count. And then next spring you go to spring training. And let's say you're not ready for a full season, so they send you to the complex and you don't hit, you could basically turn around and a year basically after you're drafted, you could look around and go, what happened? Like, that's it? And like, again, that's not like, but you did get paid a little bit and you do have a scholarship, but like, it's the thing that's tricky about this is a lot of the safe, a lot of the paths that used to be ones where you had like, okay, I'm going to go to a, you know, I'm getting recruited by a mid-major and I know that they're going to give me some time to develop. Well, you're right. They're probably not anymore. But also we have like, it used to be that if I'm in the 15th or the 22nd round, well, the good news is that they're going to need a guy to play in the Appy League this year and they're going to need a guy to play in the Northwest League or the New York Penn League or whatever next year. And so I've got 2 years to start figuring it out. Now you've got 100, you know, you've got much reduced roster limits where they don't have anything invested in you. You better show something pretty quick or they may be like on to the next guy, in my opinion.
Yeah. And just counterpoint to counterpoint, I will acknowledge that I've always had a pro slant just because that's, you know, I've had more experience dealing with people on the professional side of things versus, you know, college. But you look at like the exodus out of LSU and they had a very talented freshman class per, you know, third party rankings, you know what I mean? And a lot of those kids just dipped because they didn't play a lot as a freshman. And it, well, they're already a year set back on proving that there's any value there when they become draft eligible in another year. And I know we opened the conversation with JD Rogers, but he's a perfect example. Draft eligible right now. And he just had his most regular at bats of his college career in the first three games of Cape season here in 2024. Right. So yeah, I don't think there's an easy answer to it, JJ. I completely hear your point. I think this kind of opens the door for a different project or a different exploration, which is, okay, can we use a third party ranking of top 100 class or top 100 players in a class that make it to campus, let's go back to 2022, 2023, how many of those kids played as freshmen? How many of those kids ended up in the portal? And then when you're looking at the 2022 class that made it to campus specifically, those top rated high school players, like how many of those kids are situated to potentially be picked at when they become draft eligible, and how many of them are, you know, kind of up a creek without a paddle because they didn't play. Now, and I'd bring that back to LSU and the exodus. I mean, they're it looks like a scene from The Dark Knight when they're all trying to get on those boats and head across, and the Joker's like, well, I'm going to blow one of these things up. You know what I mean? Like, but I mean, funny, not funny, but that's what it is. Like, we all saw it last week on Twitter. It was like, LSU had all of these really talented players that didn't play this past year, just hop in the transfer portal. Cam Johnson, gone. Like, I don't know what I would have told Cam
Johnson. There are no good answers right
now. Yeah, there are none.
Yeah. But,
I mean, that's a very unsatisfying place to leave this.
We do have to wrap this conversation up, but I think it was a very insightful, you know, sort of deep analysis conversation into what's going on out there. Had some numbers to back it up as well, but there's less opportunities in pro ball, and it looks like a lot of the college opportunities are shrinking as well. I want to thank JJ for joining us. For Jeff, myself, and Matt, my co-host, thanks for joining us on the 90th Percentile. Have a great week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.